Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're getting into the world of flowering plants. You see them everywhere, but how do they actually work?
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff. Our mission is basically to shortcut you through a really great lecture on plant structure and growth from Dr. Tysi M. Hoffman.
He really lays it out, and we're focusing on angiosperms, the flowering plants, because, well, they're kind of the winners, aren't they? Most successful plants on Earth right now.
Absolutely dominant. So understanding their basic setup, their anatomy, is key to understanding, you know, pretty much any ecosystem you walk through.
Okay, so let's start broad, like Dr. Hoffman did. He reviewed the big picture of plant classification. First big split, non-vascular versus vascular.
Right. The non-vasculars, bryophytes like mosses, they stayed small, close to water.
Yeah.
Then you get the vascular plants, the ones that developed plumbing, essentially, allows them to get tall.
That plumbing changes everything. And then within the vascular group, there's another split.
Yep. Seedless ones like ferns, which reproduce with spores. And then the game changer, seeded plants.
And seeded plants divide again, right, into gymnosperms and angiosperms.
Exactly. Gymnosperms think conifers means naked seed. The seeds aren't enclosed.
Yeah.
But angiosperms, our focus, means chambered seed.
And Dr. Hoffman defined angiosperms with what he called the three Fs.
Flowers, double fertilization, and fruit. That's the trifecta.
That double fertilization. It's pretty clever. Basically, the plant doesn't waste energy making food storage, the endosperm, unless the actual embryo gets fertilized.
It's incredibly efficient. Huh. A major evolutionary advantage. Okay, so digging deeper into angiosperms, Dr. Hoffman splits them into two main groups, monocots and eudicots.
And the cot is short for cotyledon.
You got it. The cotyledon is the seed leaf. Its job is to transfer nutrients from the seed storage to the tiny embryo when it starts growing.
But you can't always crack open a seed to check. So Dr. Hoffman gave us like five practical ways to tell them apart in the field. Much easier.
Yeah, really useful shortcuts. The first one is in the name itself. Monocots have one cotyledon, mono meaning one. Eudicots have two, you meaning true, and I meaning two.
Okay, but the visible stuff.
Right. Second difference, leaf veins. Mm-hmm. Think about a blade of grass or a corn leaf, and the veins run parallel side by side. That's typical monocot.
Uh-huh.
Eudicots, which include most of your trees, shrubs, beans, that sort of thing, have branched net-like veins. You can see this easily.
New digging required.
Yes.
What's number three?
Stem structure. If you could slice the stem crosswise in a monocot, those vascular bundles, the plumbing, are just scattered all over the place.
Well, it's messy.
Kinda, yeah. But in a eudicot, they're arranged neatly in a distinct ring. This actually matters a lot for how they grow later on.
Okay. Ring versus scattered. Got it. Fourth.
Roots. Monocots usually have a fibrous root system. Think of like a dense mat of similar sized roots spreading out. No main one.
Like turf grass.
Exactly like turf grass. Eudicots, on the other hand, typically have a tap root system. One big main root going straight down like a carrot with smaller roots branching off.
Anchors it well. Okay, last one.
Flowers. This one's pretty cool. Monocot flowers tend to have parts petals, sepals in multiples of three. So three petals or six or nine.
Lilies, tulips.
Perfect examples. Eudicots usually have flower parts in multiples of four or five. So five petals, 10 petals, four petals.
Like roses or buttercups. That's a great set of identifiers.
Super handy. So building on that, Dr. Hoffman then looked at the overall plant body plan. Two main systems.
The shoot system and the root system. Pretty intuitive, above ground and below ground usually.
Generally, yeah. The shoot system includes the stems, buds, leaves, and flowers. The root system is, well, the roots.
And within the shoot, the leaves are key, right? That's where photosynthesis happens, carbon fixation.
That's their main job. They're often the greenest part. And Dr. Hoffman mentioned the petiole, that little stalk that attaches the leaf blade to the stem.
Okay. And the stem itself has important points, nodes and internodes.
Yep. Nodes are where leaves or branches attach. Think of them as junctions. The internode is just the stretch of stem between two nodes.
And the buds are where new growth starts.
Yeah. Exactly. Critical spots. You have apical buds right at the tip, the apex of a stem or branch. They drive growth upwards or outwards in length.
Makes sense.
Then you have axillary buds. Dr. Hoffman made that nice connection to the human armpit, the axilla. These buds sit in that angle, that axil, between the leaf stalk and the stem. They could potentially grow into branches or flowers.
So apical for primary lengthening, axillary for branching out?
Pretty much. Yep. And functionally, leaves are usually called vegetative shoots. Mm-hmm. They're about growth and maintenance.
Yeah.
Flowers are reproductive shoots. Their job is making the next generation via seeds and fruit.
Okay, standard plan covered. But plants get weird, don't they? Dr. Hoffman talked about structures that break the mold, modified for special jobs.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Evolution gets creative, even with something basic like roots maximizing absorption. He mentioned root hairs.
Not like hair on your head, though.
No, no. Tiny microscopic extensions of individual root cells, billions of them. The analogy Dr. Hoffman used was the microvilli in our small intestine.
Ah, maximizing surface area for absorption.
Exactly. Same principle, just for water and minerals from the soil. But then you get truly modified roots, sometimes showing up in weird places, what Dr. Hoffman called adventitious roots.
Like storage roots?
Yeah, like a radish or a carrot. It's the root itself becoming thick and fleshy to store sugars or starches, like our liver storing glycogen, basically.
Okay. And then the really strange ones, pneumatophores.
Those are wild. You find them on plants in swamps or mangroves where the soil is waterlogged and has no oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
These roots grow upwards, out of the mud and water, like little snorkels.
To breathe.
Essentially, yeah. To get oxygen to the submerged root tissues. And then there are the strangling aerial roots.
That's dramatic.
It is. Some tropical figs do this.
Mm-hmm.
A seed lands high up on a host tree, sends roots down the trunk to the ground. These roots thicken, fuse together, and can eventually surround and, well, strangle the original host tree.
Wow. Roots acting like predators, so stems get modified too.
Absolutely. Think of ginger. That's a rhizome, an underground horizontal stem. People often mistake it for a root.
Right. And potatoes.
Potatoes are tubers. And critically, Dr. Hoffman pointed out, a tuber is a modified stem for storage growing underground. Unlike the radish, which is a storage root, it's an important distinction.
Okay. Stem versus root storage. Got it. And stolons.
Stolons are like runners think strawberry plants. They're horizontal stems that grow above ground. Where they touch down, they can sprout new roots and shoots, forming a new genetically identical plant, a clone.
Cloning via stems. Cool. And leaves, they do more than just photosynthesize sometimes.
Oh, definitely. Cacti are the classic example. Their spines are leaves, modified for protection and to minimize water loss in the desert.
So the stem does the photosynthesis in cacti.
Exactly. The green, fleshy stem takes over that job. Leaves also become tendrils, those curly things peas or vines use to grab onto supports. They coil up when they touch something.
Pulling the plant closer? Clever?
Very. And think about an onion bulb, those layers inside. They're fleshy, modified leaves storing food underground.
An onion is stored leaves.
Yep. And some plants even have reproductive leaves. Little plantlets form right on the leaf edges, drop off, and grow into new clones. Asexual reproduction again.
Plants are just incredibly adaptable. Okay, let's zoom in from these big structures to the microscopic level. Tissues and cells. Dr. Hoffman laid out three main tissue systems.
Yeah, three broad categories. Dermal tissue is the outer skin, the epidermis, for protection. Vascular tissue is the transport system, the xylem and phloem we mentioned. And ground tissue is sort of everything else, the filler, storage, photosynthesis sites, support.
And within these tissues, there are different cell types based mainly on toughness. He used that ENCMA ending.
Right, the three ENCMA cells makes them easy to remember. First, parenchyma. These are the workhorse cells. Thin walls, alive when mature, do most of the photosynthesis and storage, bulk of the plant body. These tough.
Okay, middle toughness.
Collenchyma. These have thicker primary walls, still alive, and their main job is flexible support, especially in young growing stems and leaves, like the strings in celery.
Ah, okay. So they provide structure but allow bending. And the toughest.
Sclerenchyma. The name comes from sclera, meaning hard. These cells have super thick secondary walls, hardened with lignin, the stuff that makes wood woody. And here's the key thing. Sclerenchyma cells are usually dead when they're functionally mature.
Dead? How do they work if they're dead?
They provide rigid support and strength purely through their structure. Like internal scaffolding or armor plating. Think of fibers or the gritty texture in pairs, the sclerenchyma.
Huh. Dead cells doing vital work. That leads nicely into the vascular tissue, the plant circulatory system. You mentioned xylem and phloem.
Right. The sap movers.
Right.
But it's not one system like ours. Xylem and phloem are distinct, carrying different things in different ways.
Xylem carries water and minerals, right, up from the roots.
Yep, thin, watery sap. And here's where that dead cell idea comes back. The actual conducting cells in xylem trait guides and vessel elements, they mature, build their structures, and then die.
Why die?
To become hollow tubes. It allows for efficient bulk flow of water, pulled up the plant passively, like drinking through a straw you want it hollow. They have perforated ends, allowing water to move between cells easily.
Okay, dead pipes for water. What about phloem?
Phloem moves the sugary sap, the products of photosynthesis, usually from leaves down to roots or fruits or growing areas. This stuff is thick, concentrated.
The stuff maple syrup comes from?
Exactly that. Now, moving sugars around often requires active transport, which needs energy. So phloem cells, the Siv2-Gallmans, have to stay alive.
But they're specialized, too.
Very specialized. They've gotten rid of their nucleus, ribosomes, vacuole, most organelles, to make space for sugar flow. They're basically just tubes of cytoplasm.
So how do they stay alive and manage transport without the basic machinery?
They rely entirely on their adjacent companion cells. Each Siv2 element has one or more companion cells connected by channels. The companion cell has all the organelles and basically runs the metabolic show for both itself and its connected Siv2 element. It's a buddy system.
Wow, a living cell outsourcing its life support. Okay, let's shift to growth. Dr. Hoffman contrasted plant and animal growth.
Yeah, a key difference. Most animals have determinate growth. They grow to a certain size, then stop. Think humans, dogs, insects.
Right.
Plants, especially many perennials, have indeterminate growth. They can just keep growing throughout their lifespan as long as conditions allow. Growth happens at specific regions of perpetually young tissue called meristems.
And there are different types of growth.
Two main types. Primary growth is all about increasing length, making the plant taller, roots longer, branches longer. This happens at the tips, the apical meristems in buds and root tips, and also potentially the axillary buds for branches.
Getting taller and longer, what's the other type?
Secondary growth. This is about increasing girth or diameter, making stems and roots thicker, stronger. Think tree trunks getting wider year after year.
And this happens later.
Exactly. Secondary growth typically starts only after primary growth has finished in a particular section of stem or root. It's driven by lateral meristems, also called cambia. These are cylinders of meristematic tissue running down the length of older stems and roots.
Okay, cambia drive thickening. There are two.
Two main ones in woody plants. The vascular cambium is the big one for wood formation. It sits between the primary xylem and primary phloem.
And what does it do?
It divides. Cells produced towards the inside become secondary xylem. This accumulates year after year. That's what wood is. Layers of secondary xylem. Those are the tree rings.
Ah. Okay, so wood is secondary xylem. What about cells produced outward?
Those become secondary phloem. But unlike the xylem, the secondary phloem doesn't really accumulate much. As the trunk expands, the older phloem gets crushed, pushed outward, and eventually sloughed off as part of the bark.
So the wood builds up, but the secondary phloem stays relatively thin. What's the other cambium?
The cork cambium. This develops in the outer cortex and produces cork cells towards the outside. These cork cells are tough, waterproof, and dead at maturity, forming the protective outer layer of bark.
Bark comes from the cork cambium. Okay. Now, Dr. Hoffman had those two interesting concepts about how plants control this growth, apical dominance.
Right. This is fascinating. The apical bud, the one at the very tip, produces hormones that actually suppress the growth of the axillary buds lower down the stem.
Why would it do that?
It prioritizes upward growth reaching for sunlight, basically. It's a competition strategy. If you're a tree in a forest, getting tall fast is crucial.
And this is why gardeners prune.
Exactly. When you snip off that apical bud, you remove the source of the inhibitory hormones. That releases the axillary buds to grow, making the plant bushier rather than just tall and skinny.
Clever. And the other concept was girdling.
Yeah, a practical and sometimes destructive application of knowing plant anatomy. If you cut a complete ring around a tree trunk, deep enough to sever the vascular cambium and the secondary phloem just outside it,
you cut off the sugar transport downwards.
Precisely. Mm. The leaves can still make sugar. Water can still come up the xylem. But the sugars can't get down past the girdle to feed the lower trunk, and critically, the roots.
So their roots starve?
They starve, and eventually the whole tree dies. Even a huge, healthy tree can be killed this way, though it might take a while. Shows how vital that thin layer of living phloem is.
Wow. Okay, we've gone from the big divisions of plants down to monocots and eudicots, looked at all the parts, the weird modifications, the cells, the plumbing, and how they grow wider and taller. That was quite the journey through Dr. Hoffman's lecture.
It really covers the fundamentals beautifully.
Yeah.
From the seed to the mature tree. And maybe a final thought to leave you with, building on that secondary growth.
Yeah.
Think about that tree trunk again. We said the wood is secondary xylem. But Dr. Hoffman distinguishes between the older inner wood, the heartwood, and the newer outer wood, the sapwood. The sapwood, the outer layers, is the part that's actually still conducting water up the tree. But the heartwood in the center, it often gets clogged with resins and other compounds. It becomes much harder, denser, often darker.
So it's not transporting water anymore?
Nope. It's essentially dead tissue, structurally reinforced but non-functional for transport. Yet it makes up the vast bulk of a large old tree trunk. So the question is, how does this massive column of mostly dead, non-circulating heartwood provide the immense structural support needed to hold up a huge, heavy tree crown against gravity and wind for potentially centuries? It's strong, sure, but it's a fascinating structural engineering problem solved by plants, something to ponder.